Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable for September, apparently, because we're solidly into September at this point. So on this this month's roundtable, of course, I'm Tommy. Jamie's sitting over there. How you doing, man?
I'm good, sir. How's it going? What's going on?
Not much. We also have our boy Spider. What's up, Spider?
Howdy.
And we have Cabbage with us. How are you doing, Cabbage?
All right.
So we've been chatting for like the last 15 minutes, not on mic. And so we didn't know what we were going to talk about. Now we've got stuff that we've been talking about. So we will just continue those discussions, I suppose. So the thing we were talking about right before we actually hit record was the Microsoft accessibility controller, which Jamie now has sitting in his house. So let's start there. And specifically, Jamie, if you want to mock chat a little bit here, since Chad's not on the round table, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
I love that Chad sends me the base unit, which is what you start with the accessibility controller, and he's been bugging me all week like, dude, did you open it? Does it work? How cool is it? Like, seriously, like every day he's sending me something. I'm like, dude, it's the base unit. I have two analog sticks and a power button. That's it. Like, that's all there is. You gotta buy everything else. And so that's been really interesting, because I have this in my house and it's not actually gonna be usable until I spend like $400 more. Like, that's what's really interesting about it. Yeah. It's a very weird place to be.
Yeah, it's both the brilliance and the downfall in the design. The brilliance being that it's modular and it can adapt, as the name suggests, to what you need it to do, which for every individual that's going to be using the controller, that probably looks a little different. But that also means you've got to spend a ton more money and go research and figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And so it's both like universal and yet also completely individualistic and weird. And yeah, God bless you, man. That's tough. However, I'm really excited about playing with it when you get to town, that we get to do some experimentations with the thing. So,
and the interesting thing is, I work in a computer shop with couple of modders, and I've had this in my house for 3 or 4 days, and it just occurred to me yesterday. I was at work, like, I'm gonna take that thing to work and see what the guys at work think about it, because when you look at the what's out there, I don't need most of what's out there. I don't need really big buttons, and I don't need, like, foot pedals, and I don't need all of that. I need, like, an old-school arcade stick that sits flat with, you know, the joystick on the left and buttons on the right and a camera stick somewhere else on the right. That's it. That's what I needed to be. And now I have to figure out how to get it there.
Yeah, we can make it that, but we're going to have to build it to make it that. Right. Not a happy little package that comes in. So, again, it'll be fun, the process, but it's going to take money and time and all that kind of stuff, which it's kind of a bummer. It is what it is.
That's why you should be a Patreon. Come and give us your money so we can spend it trying to figure out how I can play games.
100%. One of the things that Cabbage mentioned before we hit record, though, is it's a step in the right direction. It is refreshing to see this happening in the gaming industry, even though, like, we still have a ways to go with it and it's not just a plug and play kind of thing. It is really nice that Microsoft, at least at this point, has shown interest in this area and is working to improve accessibility in video games, because it's something that definitely needs improved.
Well, and I think about the guys that are friends at the Able Gamers Foundation. You know, they're having a field day with this thing because they have labs that are built around helping people be able to play games, this has got to be massive help for them.
Yeah, I would imagine. I can't. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's something I didn't consider at all. That's really, really cool. So, so to bring in Cabbage and Spider to the conversation, Cabbage, just any thoughts you want to add? Stuff we were talking about before that before we hit record, we were chatting quite a bit. So, anything you want to add? Thoughts on the accessibility controller?
Well, I was going to say I'm actually looking at the so on their website their actual page for the controller. They have like a couple example add-ons, and then they have a link to more. Yeah, I mean, these are, it's like a start, but there's not actually that many here. And of course, some of the individual ones are insanely expensive. One of them is the cost of two of the base units. I mean, it's this grasp switch, you know. So these are really expensive things. And I don't know what sort of range these all cover for the certain disabilities they're trying to help out with. So it's a good start. And I just kind of hope that there's some company out there, whether it's is Mad Cat still around or are they gone?
I think they're gone, but they for years they built stuff like this. So somebody like that would be perfect.
Yeah, some company has like pretty good opportunity here to come in and be able to make stuff that is durable, that is very well designed and all that, but that at the same time is not totally destroying your wallet.
And like I said, you hit it right on the head because you said durable. I mean, let's be honest. You're dealing with a whole lot of handicapped people, and I'm not saying anything because I am one, but handicapped people drool. I mean, we just do. That's the thing. And so durability is a serious problem.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, you can go, oh my goodness, actually this one right here. I mean, I'm sure this thing has got a lot in it, but it's $400. It's a add-on for that is actually now it's $540 on this page. Okay, $549, and it's looks very complicated. I'm sure that it's very specifically made and all that, but that's tough. I mean,
yeah, and that's kind of the thing with all of these is that they're made specifically for a very niche use. And thus they don't sell a bunch. They don't have big manufacturing behind them. And it's that makes it hard to bring the price down on these things, which is a barrier. And it sucks that it's a barrier, but that's going to continue to be a barrier.
It sucks when you look at something like this, where it's just I'm not trying to say I completely understand everything that goes into this, but it's literally a big red switch and it's $60 to $5. Like it's a big button that they're charging that much for. I just kind of would have to imagine somebody else could make something just as good that a lot of people would need for this controller. They do need a big switch, maybe a bunch of them, you know, and the idea is that you probably need to buy a bunch of these and they're $65 each. Like,
and that's where I'm curious to if, like, how easily this is going to be modular in that, like, I could go buy just a bunch of buttons from an electronics store and wire them pretty easily. Cause if, I mean, a button is an on off switch, you know, like that's, it's a fairly easy design thing. I'd terminate that into a plug that you can stick in the back of this controller. If you DIY it, you can probably do it pretty cheap, for at least a lot of the kind of basic functionality. Something like a joystick is probably going to be where you spend more of the money. But I would think just some of the more, especially when we're talking about what Jamie needs as far as just like face buttons, just needs buttons he can hit, you know, people.
And I do need bigger buttons. And I was talking to the guys, I was talking about the guys at work. I need slightly bigger buttons and I need the ability to flip the switch and have whatever button the switch is on to be a rapid fire button. That's, you know, something simple where I can just, where if I'm playing Uncharted or something and I'm or Max Payne or whatever, and I'm trying not to die, that I don't have to hit the button 18 times. it's really, really simple stuff that I think is going to be fun for somebody like you, because believe it or not, and all the stuff that you do, and you do a lot of DIY stuff, and so this is I can see we're going to have a lot of fun with this, but not everybody who is disabled has a Tommy out there that goes, okay, let's figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Which is totally fair.
Like a new business avenue for you, Tommy.
Yeah. No joke.
You can be the Tommy out there for every disabled person.
Hey, man. That's not a bad idea.
It's like a Big Brother program, but it's just for Tommy. To
like seriously, this is what he likes to do. This is his thing.
You might have to complete that cloning thing first, but
fair. but if we can monetize it, I mean, if they're $60 for a Switch, I can sell a Switch for cheaper than that and still make a good profit, you would think. So. Yeah, I love it. That's a good idea. So, but it is. I'm looking at more of the specs right now, and all the inputs on it appear to be either just a 3.5 millimeter jack or a USB. And so, especially with switches, a 3.5 millimeter jack, like go to an electronics store, and you can probably get a lot of stuff that's going to work just fine. Isn't going to be as pretty, but will likely work, be functional for a lot cheaper than you'd probably buy either through the Microsoft store if they're selling this stuff directly, or other places that are going to be selling stuff geared to this specifically. So, yeah, it's something to look into. And again, we're going to have a lot of fun playing with it, with hopefully the end goal being Jamie able to play on consoles more, which is something that he's been locked out of for quite a while. That's obviously what we'd love to see happen with it. But the journey to get to that point is going to be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might be more fun than playing the actual game.
It very well could be.
Because it just depends on what you're playing. But
right.
That, again, that's the problem with it being only, for now, Xbox, is that there's just, I mean, there's good third-party games that come out, but the games you would want to play are on PlayStation, probably. So we need to get this on PlayStation, is what it is.
Yes.
Like it would be, it's the same problem VR has, like that you don't really know how it works until you try it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be different for every person that uses it. And well, so until you can get it in your home and try it out, then you may not know exactly what setup for sure that you need.
And that's the thing. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was talking with the guys at work yesterday. I know what I used to play with, and I'm not sure if I still have enough play in both of my hands to do it the way I used to do it. That's why you can't really drop $400 on something unless you're absolutely positive that it's gonna work. And if you've ever been around a disabled person, you don't know until you get it in your hands and you actually try it. Like, and that's what kind of gets me with this, is like, what's the return policy on all this stuff? Like, yeah. You can buy a bunch of stuff, but you're not going to really know until that person has it in their hand.
Yeah, 100%, which is, again, the incredibly tricky part of this, and going to what Cabbage just said too, if you're playing a Microsoft game, you'd probably rather play it on PC, especially in your situation, Jamie, where you can function on a mouse and keyboard.
Right.
That's not as much of a challenge to you, and so it's so limiting right now, being a Microsoft thing of either Xbox or PC with it, that it's kind of like, well, that's not really that helpful, because those aren't the games that are out there that we're super interested in. They're fine, and again, what Cabbage said about the third party stuff, that's handy. There's some good third party stuff that's still only consoles, that comes out on Xbox and PlayStation 4 that you would have access to, but it's still a small library. I mean, so
let's be honest about something. If you and I can do this for cheap, and I can like get to play Halo again, like that's probably worth $200. Like sure. if I can play Halo again for reasonably priced, I'm okay with that, and then have access to what's on the PC. But that's right now the only thing on the Xbox I really want to play that's not on the PC is Halo and Gears. That's it. And so that has a lot to do with it also.
Yeah, that's fair. All that being said, we did have a couple other topics we're going to bring up as well. And so let me ask about which one we will. Let's do Cyberpunk. Let's talk about Cyberpunk for a little bit. So since last we did a roundtable, the whole Cyberpunk 2077 video gameplay, all that happened. And so we found out in chatting before we hit record that the voicemails that we referenced on the last show that we had in the email box are actually from Cabbage talking about Cyberpunk 2077. So Cabbage, apparently you have some thoughts and we would like to hear them.
All right. So, yeah. So I watched that whole 40-minute video. And what was great is that I didn't, maybe other people knew it was going to happen, but all of a sudden I saw some notification of it and I was freaking out like, wow, we finally get to see the game, because for the longest time, this demo was only seen behind closed doors. So I was like, oh, I got to watch this. And yeah, I mean, it's just about as great as many of the like gaming journalists that were able to see it at E3 were saying. It looks incredibly immersive. It looks like a lot of the combat and a lot of that stuff, there's a lot of creativity that can happen in there. It looks like a very developed, detailed world. I mean, it's going to have a lot of that stuff you want to have from a CD Projekt Red open world RPG. But
that's a big but. Like, he worked up to that. That's a big but.
This is obviously a very personal thing that most people are probably going to hear and be like, what is wrong with you? Basically, the tone of the game is very unappealing from what I'm seeing so far.
Explain that.
Yeah. So, you know, when you look at The Witcher 3, which is, of course, their last game, it is a pretty dark world. I mean, the world in The Witcher is not, you know, the stakes that are happening for a lot of these towns and people that you're around are unfortunate. It's a sort of dark, it's a dark fantasy world, but your role as Geralt, who is a witcher, allows you to do good things. Actually, what's interesting about that game, because you have to play as Geralt, you really can't be bad in that game. You can kind of be more of a dick sometimes than other times, but really Geralt is a good guy. So you have to be good. This new game, this is just one 40-minute demo. This is not the whole game. I wouldn't want to completely judge the game based on it. But the sense I got from how the game world, the way that your character interacts with the world, is that you kind of have to just be this agent of pain and chaos in a world that's already riddled with it. And in a game where the environment is so immersive and it feels so much like what our world could become, it's icky. It's like, I don't want to play a game where it's just this like badass, I'm just going to go around and cause all destruction I can and get what I can while I can. And yeah, it just feels very nasty. It just doesn't feel like I want to in a game where it's a CD Projekt RPG. You're going to be playing this for many, many hours till you even get to the end of whatever this main story is. And it's like, do I want to spend like 40 or 50 hours just like in the mire, like in the, you know, like in the, just the icky, dark, nihilistic underpinnings of, I don't know quite how to describe
that
yeah, but
That is a really interesting take because
most I've never heard anybody else say this about
because
the game.
Because I will bring, you know, we talk a lot about this War of Mine, 8-Bit Studios, This War of Mine, and Frostpunk, and how those are super, super depressing. And you sit and you play them, and it's a couple hours for whatever you're doing, and then you're done, and you go on to something else, and you might come back to it when you have your energy back and you're ready to be depressed again. But but like, it's not like a 50-hour thing. This is going to be a 50-hour thing. And so I sort of get what you're saying, but at the same time, the angle that you're taking, I don't really see, maybe because, and this may be where you're going, I don't really see a space for a quote unquote good guy in this environment. Like,
Exactly. This is a world that is already to shit, and you might as well just get what you can while you can. That's what I'm saying, and I'm saying that for me personally, and I'm going to play it. Everybody's going to play that game, but I don't know, unless I get so into the mechanics of the game, and just
Unless it's like a Mankind Divided kind of a deal, which I see potential for, like, I see
yes,
what you're saying.
And there's some similarities there, yeah. But unless it's just so fun to play and I kind of just don't really care about the story, which would be the polar opposite of The Witcher 3, which is a game where the gameplay is fine, but I'm really playing it for the world and the story and all that stuff. This would have to be the polar opposite, I guess, if in fact the game does just kind of feel like you're just this kind of shitty person.
So let me ask you a question.
I think I'm getting old. I think really what this means is I'm getting old.
Let me ask you a question in all sincerity. Do you have the same feel, the same vibe about Grand Theft Auto?
No. And yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think there's, it's probably, I haven't really thought about that. So I'd really have to think more about it. I think there's this other thing too, like, let's say like GTA 5, the characters, they're actually developed characters. And again, Cyberpunk could very well be this way too. But in GTA, you kind of feel like you're observing characters, whether or not you're supposed to think they're good doesn't matter.
Yes.
It's like you're watching a Coen Brothers movie or something where basically everybody's shitty.
It's not watching Breaking Bad is what it is.
Yes.
Like,
Walter White is a very interesting character, but he's basically a villain. Yes. That's a very simple way of putting it, but you're essentially watching a villain, but he's also sentimental and all that. That's kind of where GTA fits in. And GTA also has a little bit of a foot into a zany, goofy land. Like I'm watching watching Bad Boys or a Michael Bay action. You know, it's like,
yes.
But the CD Pro, this new Cyberpunk game is like, it's like the new Blade Runner, which was a great movie. It's like the world in terms of the world, like it's just this stark, real thing that feels like it very well could happen. Just there's so much context wise that makes it feel different to me, I guess.
Yeah.
So
I bring that up because while you were talking about that, I Grand Theft Auto is the immediate place my brain went of like, oh yeah, depravity in the characters, and specifically with Grand Theft Auto 5, thinking about Trevor as one of the three main characters that you're playing, and that is just a screwed up character.
Oh yeah.
If the whole game was Trevor, I don't think I could do it. I really did. Like, I struggled through a few parts of Grand Theft Auto 5 playing Trevor because he is so depraved as a character.
Well, and the moral compass in that game, as funny as it is to say that he's a moral compass,
right?
Is the moral compass is
Franklin. Yeah.
And especially at the end, by the time you get to the end, he is, and again, that's what drama does, is characters are bouncing off each other and you're seeing the sort of arena of ideologies and all that. I'm worried that Cyberpunk is just not going to be that sophisticated, because to be honest, one thing that struck me from the demo, which was really weird based on the fact they made The Witcher, I thought the dialogue was almost all really bad. I thought it was all like Ubisoft terrible, you know, like Far Cry. Like it felt very, it felt like it was handling a very serious stuff in a very,
lighthearted.
No, very reckless.
Yeah.
Very, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I know that most people are listening to this and they're like, dude, what? You are so overanalyzing video games. I just can't play video games the same way I used to. That's why I'm saying, like, I'm getting old. Like, if the game has a world that is so engrossing like that, my mind can't help but go to these places. But I can go and play Monster Hunter and murder giant dragons for hours. I don't care. Because I'm playing a goofy game that's about the mechanics. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels different to me. Anyway.
Spider, get in here. I got to hear your take.
Say that I'm wrong.
Well, I haven't. The problem is I haven't played Witcher, so I can't speak to. Cyberpunk looks cool, and I'm looking forward to it, but I just haven't got to any. In fact, I haven't played any of the. I've got like Witcher 1 and 2 in Steam, and just, you know, time and all that fun stuff and huge backlog. So,
well,
unfortunately, I can't add a whole lot to the conversation. But
what I'm wondering is, I want to know, would you feel that way if you were in a 50-hour experience that was dark and seedy and nasty? Like, and I mentioned it in the show, that Cyberpunk is very film noir. And film noir is great for 2 or 3 hours, but can you do it for 50?
Yeah, but I mean, it's still a video game to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm not old enough yet.
There might be a little bit of, I don't know if you guys are actually getting what I'm saying. I'm not saying that the world being dark and seedy is the problem. I'm saying that the characters the characters seem like there is going to be no room for anybody but just the worst people.
There needs to be some redemptive quality in a character for it to be relatable.
Yeah.
Which ultimately, like even in Breaking Bad, which is a great example, Walter White ends up being redemptive in the end. Like,
and the people around him are mirrors for him to look into and see how shitty he is. That's absolutely, again, this is basic drama stuff.
Yes.
Like, this is what you do. This is what you do. This, you have to juxtaposition the Joker with his crazy, chaotic horribleness with somebody and people who are trying to not be that way.
Yes.
That's where the drama is, you know, and I'm worried the game is not going to be interested in that. I feel like it's going to feel like a lot of the Far Cry stuff does, which in Far Cry, you just turn your brain off and you play the fun open world shooty, shoot 'em up and hunting.
Yes.
I'm with this game. It's like, it's a combination of, I wonder if I won't be able to do that. And I'll wish that I wouldn't have to, because I would want to be able to really inhabit narratives and stories and characters in this world and not just turn my brain off and play the game.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
If it's a Far Cry level, like shut your brain off, and I'm a Far Cry fan. I've talked about that a lot. I enjoy those games to death, but they are like, those characters suck. Like,
they're the worst.
Far Cry 4 wasn't as terrible. Far Cry 3, man, the player characters just terrible. Like,
yeah,
just the worst. And so, yeah, but you can get through it because that's not what the game is about. A CD Projekt Red game, it's going to be a disappointment to me no matter what if it's that kind of thing where I just want to check out of the character.
And again, this is just based on one video. All of this could be swept away when the game comes out and it's a lot more developed. I'm obviously not going to close off to that. That would be really silly to do off of one video. I'm just saying, based on what I saw, I have these worries. So
yeah,
well, you could have the same worries with Last of Us 2 as well, just based on the trailer.
I do. Yeah.
Fair point. I will say on Cyberpunk, I think one of their primary goals with that video was to show the gameplay mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
So they chose a section, a chunk of gameplay that showed off a lot of the different things with cybernetics and different abilities and all that kind of stuff that probably wasn't the best to showcase the story. Hopefully there's other places, or the characters. Well, hopefully there's other places where that is showcased better. If not, I think it'll be fun. We're going to all play it. Yeah. Like
I'm going to play it. I'm going to play at least some of it. I just might not play as much of it as I would.
The Witcher 3 is an all-time great game. There's a really good, probably more than 50-50 chance that Cyberpunk isn't, right? Like, being an all-time great game is really hard to do, even from a developer that we have that expectation from.
And the thing is, it's hard to do that twice. Like, they did The Witcher, and I hadn't really thought about it until now, but they did The Witcher, and because they did The Witcher, we automatically think, man, this is going to be awesome. And I brought up Deus Ex Mankind Divided earlier. Like, the first, like, the original Warren Spector Deus Ex game was fantastic. And then they released Deus Ex Invisible War, which was awful, because Spector wasn't really there. And asking a company, asking a development team to release two all-time great knockdown, drag-out, best game ever kind of a thing. That's hard.
Unless you're Valve.
Yeah.
Oh, Half-Life 1 and 2.
And then you just stop doing it.
And then you stop because you're like, we can't do that. You know?
It's like, we've got another way to make money.
Or Portal 1 and 2 kind of qualifies for that as well.
But to be fair with The Witcher, even the first two games aren't the caliber of The Witcher 3. It's a fair point. They have such high expectations because of a single game, which is probably unfair on our part, but whatever, it's gonna be cool. So
I'll just say that if it comes out and it is the way that I fear it will be, that's cool. There's plenty of other things for me to play game. Or I'll just not play it and everybody else will enjoy it. And I'll be like, all right, that's cool. I'm glad you guys are enjoying it. Like, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. It's just a video game.
let me ask you another earnest question and I'll move on, I promise. But do you have a similar worry about Red Dead at this point?
Well, and you know, with that game, there are the trailers that show a little bit of the story and the characters, but I think it's still, again, it's like Rockstar kind of strikes this balance that feels like Tarantino.
Yeah.
You know, like their games feel like a lot of his movies, and I sort of play them as if I'm watching one of those movies.
Yeah.
You kind of get into this weird headspace with it. It just doesn't strike me as having the same personal issues as that. Cyberpunk would.
Yep. I agree with that. I think that's a good take. Spider, what have you been playing recently? Let's get you in here on the conversation with something.
I am back to Zelda Breath of the Wild. Actually, I looked at my save file and I hadn't played for like 2 months. And I actually took my Switch with me. My wife and I went on our vacation. I think I mentioned that we were doing that on the last show. To the UK.
Yeah.
So we How'd were gone go, for 3 weeks. That was amazing. I don't want to, you know, hug an entire gaming podcast about all the awesome things we did in the UK, but that was awesome. Because I took it with me and I thought, okay, great. Maybe I'll play on the plane or on the way back. But I ended up like sleeping a lot of the way to try and acclimate my body to my new time zone because they're 7 hours ahead. And then once we got there, I mean, it was just enough to do. And then I was just so wiped by the end of the day that I was ready to go to sleep. So I actually didn't end up playing for the 3 weeks while we were over there. Now that I'm back, I'm finally back in. And I'm actually enjoying it now that I've kind of, I guess I've gone through the 5 steps of depression or where I finally arrived at acceptance that this is the game and this is the way it is. And I'm just going to enjoy it for the way it is and not lament the things that I wish were in it.
I'm so happy for you. That makes me so glad.
So if I look at my save file here, I'm only 17 hours in. So I've still probably barely scratched the surface. I don't know.
I love the way.
I haven't even beat my first guardian yet.
I love the fact that he's talking about Zelda the way that Cabbage was just talking about Cyberpunk. Like, I really don't know about this. Like, I guess it's really good. Like, I think it's gonna be really good. Trust us, dude. It's really good. Just hang in there.
I could easily see the roundtable in like 2 or 3 years of Cabbage saying that exact thing about Cyberpunk.
Yep.
Like I've just gotten away from it for a couple of months. I'm back. I've kind of made peace with it, and it's fun now.
And I don't want to drag us back to Cyberpunk too much, but I really don't think it's that far away. I think that game is going to come out pretty soon.
Interesting.
I've seen a lot of people saying that on that, but the developers have commented saying the main story is completely playable. So that means the game is pretty far along. I would say it's probably end of next of 2019.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Anyway,
I can see that.
But yes, at that time, I will probably be saying the same thing.
Cabbage, back to you, because I know you've been playing Spider-Man, and you're the only one amongst us that's been playing Spider-Man. Yes. So I would love to hear your initial thoughts of that game.
Well, yeah, so let's talk about the polar opposite of what I'm worried that this other game will be. Spider-Man is a game where you are a superhero. It doesn't care about being anything other than that, and it's the best ever done of it, I think.
Nice.
So
of Spider-Man or of the of superhero genre?
It's the best superhero game. I mean,
really?
And honestly, there's not that many good superhero games.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm like, thinking.
What's
the competition?
You're saying it's better than Arkham. Because
did you play any of the Infamous games?
No, and I know that the story in those games are supposed to be really good.
The gameplay is also very good.
But as a fighter. But I mean, like, as a game where you inhabit a superhero. That you probably all of us grew up in some capacity
that with. You already have some nostalgia with.
Yes,
basically.
Like okay. this game is Spider-Man in every way that you probably grew up reading in the comics or watching the cartoons or whatever. This is the best Peter Parker that's ever been done outside of comics. This is the best Spider-Man. This is like the best of everything it touches on. It feels like the developers just wanted to capture the essence of what Spider-Man is all about.
I
think that's what the Arkham game does too with Batman. I think that's why people say it's a Batman simulator. This is a Spider-Man simulator. This is you. And in, you know, the big thing people always want to talk about is the web slinging and the complexity and the control you have over the web slinging is stuff that you used to dream about being able to do in a video game. It's like, what if we had a Spider-Man game where you can do that? You can do that shit in this game. What if we had a Spider-Man game where you have to fight Vulture and Electro all at once and you have to dodge this guy and do this all in midair and you're complete in control of it? You can do that in this game. Like, it is insane how much you feel like you are playing through the fantasy of being Spider-Man that everybody has probably had since they were a kid. The game is about being a hero in almost every way you could be, from the big grand saving people from a falling building to helping clean up the environment and helping homeless people in a shelter and cooking this and doing little mini game science experiments to clean up the air in the city, like literally. And that's the other thing it captures is that typically Peter Parker is not depicted actually as a scientist outside of the comics and the cartoon. You are a scientist as Peter Parker in this game.
That's cool.
And it's just cool that we get to finally, because I always viewed him as that. I viewed him as he was Spider-Man. You know, you know, a little generic way of putting it is that he's Spider-Man at night or whatever during the day, because Spider-Man doesn't have to be at night like Batman. And then at other times he's Peter Parker doing sciencey things and
photography things and
And you do that in this game. It just captures like everything you wanted to, except for certain characters that aren't in this one. We're going to have them in other games, of course. You know, there's going to be sequels.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Let me ask you this, because I've mentioned on the show that I really, really, really kind of dislike the new Spider-Man game. Just tell me that Mary Jane's a redhead. Just.
Oh, wait, you disliked the
new Spider-Man movie?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not like that movie.
I hate that movie. Please tell me.
And there's many reasons, and we won't get into it. But,
please tell me.
This is MJ. This is MJ. And not only is she MJ, but she's the most MJ. Like, she is helping Spider-Man as an investigative reporter, sneaking in and doing things to give him information, and actually can play as her in certain sections. The sections you play as her from a gameplay standpoint are not very good, but story-wise, thematically, it's great. I don't want to say too much with a lot of stuff, because I don't want to spoil it for people that are super into this kind of stuff.
One more. Is Gwen Stacy in there?
I don't know.
Awesome.
I'm not done with the game.
Okay.
I've played through, I'm assuming, half of it, maybe.
I'm so happy right now.
I'm just saying, I am not even somebody that like is a huge comic reader, but I did read some Spider-Man comics when I was young. I watched that animated TV series probably everybody watched in like the 90s or whatever. And so there's a certain feeling of the characters and the villains and all that that this game captures. And it also has kind of unique takes on the villains visually or personality-wise, but they still honor what you expect from those characters. It's just a dream game. It's like, this is what Arkham felt like at the time, especially the first game. It was like, what? This is like a really good Batman game where you really feel like him, and where they even got Kevin Conroy to do the voice and all that kind of stuff, you know? But these are new voice actors. These are completely newly casted actors and all that for it, but at the same time, they feel like they just fit right into it. And some of them, like, I think this is personally my favorite Peter Parker and Spider-Man in terms of, you know, outside of comic-y stuff. So anyway,
let me ask you a question on the gameplay side of things. How open world is the open world? Like, how much can you just like go around and do random stuff and not care about progressing in story or whatever?
Well, and I will say, yeah, so the entire game in terms of the map is Manhattan. I mean, and it obviously, I'm sure, is not to scale, but it kind of feels like it is. It's an insanely big play area. Yeah, and I will say, yeah, some of the downsides of the game are the fact that a lot of the side stuff is a little bit sort of gathering tokens that you use as currency to get new suits and stuff like that, and it's not, and again, I always like to say, it's like, you can't compare some of these open world games to The Witcher 3 or something like that, where it just has insanely dense side content. This game doesn't have that. So far from what I've seen, the side quests are not super interesting. It is more of a game that's about the linear story, but if you don't want to always do that, the open world does have stuff that plays into what you want to be doing for fun, which is the web-slinging and the combat and getting stuff to upgrade to get new suits that give you different skins that also unlock a different suit power that I like, because you can, when you get that new suit power from that new suit, you can put that in any other suit. So you don't have to use that suit, which I'm glad, because some of the suits look dumb. I'm a fan of the original suit. I like the new one they made for this game, but I just have to use the classic. I just like it the most. So anytime I've unlocked a new suit, I'm like, oh, cool, I'll use that power, but I'm just going to put it back on the original classic Spider-Man suit. And that's the other thing, is that the combat is very Arkham-inspired, obviously. I mean, a lot of these games are going to be from now on. But it also feels very much like it feels kind of like a Castlevania or one of those games where it's a lot of aerial combos and stuff like that, or maybe like Bayonetta. Sometimes it has a Bayonetta or Devil May Cry. I think I meant to say Devil May Cry.
Yeah.
it has that feel to it, mixed with the Arkham, you know, countering this and and throwing this guy into the other guy, all that stuff you see from an Arkham game. But
yeah,
again, it just, it's fulfilling these like little fantasies of the, how you imagined a Spider-Man game would play when you're fighting a bunch of thugs and all that. So, and a cool thing about the game is as I'm progressing through the story, the city is changing as the story progresses. Like there are things that happen in the story that then changes the city and the stakes around you. So you always feel like there is an urgency to what you need to go do. It feels like you're Spider-Man. Again, it's like, it feels like you need to go do these things. And when you're doing them, it feels super badass and awesome. So what else do you want from a Spider-Man game? Like,
it's fair. That's awesome. I'm encouraged by that.
I'm the only other question I have is about JJ, because you know Mr. Jameson got to be in there somewhere.
Oh my God, it's amazing! Okay, this is not really a spoiler. You know this right away. He is in this game, and his place in the story is that, you know, he's no longer at the Daily Bugle. He's now an underground podcaster.
Oh!
And what's great is that, and you can turn this off if you want, but like Peter's always getting his podcast downloaded to his phone or whatever. So while you're swinging around, all of a sudden you'll be hearing this new little short episode, and he has people call in, and he basically becomes like an Alex Jones type character. It's so funny because that's exactly what he's like. He's this crazy conspiracy dude who just thinks Spider-Man is everyone's problem and he's causing all the problems. And it's hilarious. I also say the humor in the game is great from a lot of different characters. Like it doesn't feel like a lot of typical cheesy game humor that you can have. It feels like it was written like good humor for a Marvel movie. Like I would say I'm blown away, but I kind of expected this based on what we've seen for the past couple years. Like, slowly this game was building to look like, yes, we're finally getting that Spider-Man game that we've always really kind of dreamed of. So
that,
play it, although that, everybody probably is.
That brings up what Tommy and I have been talking about. Not only do we have God of War, but now we have the Spider-Man game that is on that level, apparently. Like, Sony can't lose at this point. Unless they get stupid. I don't think.
Yeah,
they're in a good place.
This generation, they have such... I mean, they've sold, what, twice as many units as the Xbox in terms of those two?
Yeah.
And they just keep getting these exclusive games that they make sure that their console has, and they have their little... They're really these... I'm actually spacing on the name of the developer who made this. Is it Insomniac?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. Aren't they a Sony studio?
Yeah.
So, Santa Monica, of course, who made God of War, is a Sony studio. Yep. Naughty Dog's a Sony studio. Like, they just know what they're doing. They really do.
So
they have excellent talent.
So, yes, Spider, yeah. I have a question for you, sir. Are you a fan of Spider-Man? Please tell me you're a fan of Spider-Man.
Of course I am.
Well, so
that seems like a weird question.
Well, because you don't know. Some people are like, it's funny that we brought up Batman because some people are like, I hate Batman because he's just a rich guy with a lot of tools and he doesn't have superpower and it doesn't make sense.
Oh my goodness.
And then, those people are dumb.
And then
a rich orphan with a lot of tools.
More going on there, of course.
And then there's people like that hate Superman because like he only has the one weakness and now how lame is that? No, like so.
Those people aren't quite as dumb.
Yeah, that's a little bit more interesting, but there's a little more to Superman as well, of course. Yes. Yeah.
So let me. What I want to ask is this something, Spider, that sounds interesting to you? Because now that I've heard Gavin talk about this, I can't even play the game. Like, I have a PlayStation sitting here, and I can't play it because I can't pick up the freaking controller. But all I want to do is, like, run out and pick it up. Are you excited about Spider-Man at this point?
I mean, I am. I've played through all the Arkham games and enjoyed all those. So again, it's time and prioritization and which games I'm going to... I'll make this... since I don't have a whole lot to add for games for this roundtable, I'll make a promise that I'll play at least two things in my backlog by next roundtable so that I have something new to bring to the conversation, whether it's a really old game that hasn't been mentioned for a while, but maybe it, try and give a new take on it, or if I pick up something new, so...
I am, just so everybody knows, speaking of superheroes, if you haven't picked up the latest Batman Telltale game, it is on sale this weekend for $10. Yep. So Tommy and I've got to pick that up, and I'm going to continue playing that. And I also have Star Traders, which I picked up last week, that I have not started yet. I'm excited about that as well. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You're right at home not playing new games here, Spider. The fact that you played any games is doing pretty good. I've played a little bit of God of War this week, and I'm incredibly proud of that, but we've talked about God of War ad nauseum at this point. So, yeah, I feel your pain for sure. So let me mention one quick thing before we wrap up. I got a text from Chad about half an hour into the show that just said, fell asleep. give Chad all the crap you want for fell asleep.
Okay, so I mentioned this during the last show, and now I can really hammer it home because dude posted on Facebook that he fell asleep playing a video game last week. And like, okay, that's fine, that happens, but what kind of millennial freak posted on Facebook? If I fall asleep playing a video game, I'm not actually going to admit it? Like, that's not something that you do. What is wrong with you, dude? That's all I'm saying. And now...
I've fallen asleep. Rock Band, believe it or not.
Well done. That's impressive.
That's an accomplishment. I was pretty wiped, so.
I mean, we're getting older, as we've discussed, I understand. But there's just some stuff I'm not going to admit. Like, I'm just not.
That's fair. So, Chad, you missed your chance to talk about Spider-Man with us, which is a bummer. But next time, we'll see what happens. He'll fall asleep again, so it won't matter.
I'm pretty sure he's fallen asleep during the podcast.
Well, he's finally, here's the thing, here's what happened. He's finally got enough switches in his house that all of his kids are pacified, and he can actually fall asleep. So that's what it is. All the kids have switches, and they're all happy, and it's all quiet, and he just gets someplace quiet, and he just falls asleep.
Yeah, honestly, like, as now a parent, God bless you, man. Get that sleep where you can. Like, do what you gotta do. It's rough. So, yeah, good for you, Chad, getting some sleep while you're supposed to be on a podcast with us. Do what you need to do, man.
He can do whatever he wants. We're still taking his money.
That's right. No doubt about it. So we appreciate the contribution. The first month, too, we gave him crap about this. The first month, he's actually paying, like, price to be on the round table. He falls asleep. So good value for your money. But we'll take it. We're plenty happy with your cash. So... All that being said, we did wrap. So thank you guys for being here. Of course, if you're interested in participating in the roundtable or just want to help contribute to the show and help us buy stuff for the accessibility controller and video games and all that good stuff, you can do that on Patreon. Go to gaminguncensored.com and click on that Patreon link right there near the top on the right-hand side of the page. And as always, specifically Spider and Cabbage, thank you guys for your support. Thank you guys for being here. This is always a pleasure, one of the most fun parts of doing this show. For sure. Let's us talk to people who actually are playing games. So that's handy. So we sound like a gaming podcast every once in a while. So we appreciate both you supporting us and playing games so we can talk about Spider-Man intelligently. So anything before we wrap up?
I'm going to go find Spider-Man. Like, I'm going to go find a YouTube channel or something. That's what I'm going to do right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds great. That's definitely one when we get in a room together, I think we're going to be playing a lot of. So for this month, thank you guys for being here. We appreciate you. And we will see y'all on the roundtable next month. We will see you with another show next week. And for now, we are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Is brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.